music has been part of the primitive existence of man since the beginning, and it stays with us. And if I think what science is revealing more and more is how deep that is in our DNA. I've read a couple studies where there's actually a particular part of the brain that has no other function but to help us decipher music.
You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
So today on Hooked on Startups, I cannot begin to tell you how excited I am to have none other than John Vitale on the show. John, welcome to Hooked on Startups.
Oh, I'm jazzed to be here. Thanks for having me, Matthew.
So let me see if I can give everyone a brief introduction about you, John. You're the music chief and co-founder at Focus at Will, which is a neuroscience-based music service that helps increase your focus by reducing distractions, energizing you, and helping you hit those critical deadlines, which we will talk about because Focus at Will is the most brilliant company. And Will Henshaw, who's your co-founder and partner in the business, was on the show a few months back. So
my best mate.
It's an astonishing company with an astonishing experience when you actually listen to some of the music you've created. But your background in music goes back 25 plus years. And again, I'm going to read this as well. So your experiences in sound and film production as a supervisor, producer, engineer, mixer. You've worked with Warner Brothers, Sony, BMG, Universal Music, the B-52s, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Filter, Eminem, Katie Lang, George Clinton, The Romantics. The list goes on. You know, there's pages and pages here of people that you've worked with. You know, hours could be spent just explaining.
One of those fantastic resume things, right? Yeah, I've been really blessed to have some experience with some fantastically creative and crazy and wonderful people in the music industry and technology.
When was it now that you started that business?
Boy, I think the napkin discussion about starting that business happened very late 2009 and was kind of born the beginning of 2010. And we did the pivot of what people realize is Focus at Will about 2013.
And the critical thing about Focus at Will is you are reinventing music. Is that a fair description?
I think it's a concept of understanding music deeper as a set of kind of like energy DNA building blocks. And how do you use those to induce a state of focus? I think music has a connotation of being more for entertainment. And what we're really trying to have people understand is that music is this magic source that can be used for many different things. And we've done a deep dive with some neuroscientists and some wonderful people to find out what really moves people with music and how can we harness it to help people focus and get more creative.
The really interesting thing about music is if you start looking at it, because we all think we understand what music is, but the more you look at it, it's funny because I think humans are the only species that can understand or sort of benefits. I know you were talking about plants when we met up recently, but it's described as auditory cheesecake. Have you come across that description before?
No, I love that. I want to put that in my repertoire.
So music is, in other words, it's cheesecake in the sense that we know it's bad for us. It doesn't do us any good, but it just feels so amazing for some reason. And this concept that music is something that it pushes various parts of our brain. And is that what you sort of have discovered, or is that what you unlocked to create Focus at Will?
Boy, well, there's a couple of ways to tell this story. I think if we looked at it chronologically, what became real interesting and how we did a deeper dive into music was one of our original concepts of Focus at Will was to become music for reading. And the concept was, this was pre-iPad. The iPad was going to be launched and it was going to be this magic ebook reader. And we thought, well, wow, what if we could be the people who could bring this amazing Hollywood music soundtrack to when you read a book and there was the romantic scene and he carries her over the threshold, you're going to hear just the right music and it's going to help you, you know, cut the distractions around you and really get immersed in the book. So how do we emotionally make sure that all these pieces of music are going to make sense in different genres of music as you read this book? So it entailed me boy, doing a deep psychological study about what, how do you quantify how happy something is or how sad it is, or what's the level of intrigue when you go to the intrigue. Now, if you're scoring a movie, it's really easy because you're going to design this piece of music that completely fits that director's cut of it, right? If you're going to post score. But now you can't do that. So how do you rate music that's going to be loaded into this player and play automatically? So I had to do a kind of how do you break down the DNA or the energetics of music and assemble them so that a computer can play this back for you, right? Or something can follow the storyline. In fact, we even had a robot reading text technology that we were partnered and licensed with that would read the passage of music and then partner up the music with it. So it was quite an experience. Now, we tested this at Amazon, and they were like, hey, this is very cool. We thought we were going to cash out and be the, you know, the startup heroes in a few months. Yeah. Of course, it doesn't work like that. And what they did say is, I had rigged this thing, so if you put the book down, it played very neutral music. It wasn't happy or sad, but it was very neutral music so that if you had to answer the phone, whatever it was, this just became background music. And it was interesting because the test group said, wow, when we put this book down in the background, it's great to work to. But we think that your market for actually having this happy and sad music for reading books might be much smaller. You know, when they did the market test, only a certain percentage of people thought it added a lot of value to the book. So lo and behold, the light bulb went off and we thought, well, wait a minute, maybe we should be the people who can find the right music to help people get work done because people will pay for that. So the business model was kind of created around that concept. But what it enabled me to do was do a deep dive in psychology and actually start quantifying what attributes of music do you break down and sequence and fire to start creating experiences for.
And was that completely different to what you were doing previously in scoring and producing music and working with all those other bands?
Yeah, you know, it's almost the antithesis because for focus, you have to understand, first of all, what tickles the human brain and then how do you support it. But now when you're in the entertainment game, the idea is to totally engage somebody. You know, how do you make that piece of music hit on cue in the movie theater so everyone is just blown away by it? If you're going to make the hip hop record, it's how do you make that chorus? I was on a songwriting team and we had to write three different choruses for the song because it had to bang so hard when it hit the chorus, you had to make sure that you owned radio. So you're really taking a whole different approach when you're looking at entertainment versus support.
And what, and how do you measure music? You talk about the DNA of music. But how do you measure something that is it, you measure it emotionally or do you measure it through physical reactions? How do you understand what the feedback is when you put a piece of music, when you listen to some music, how do you measure the feedback or the response?
That's a really, really great question. First of all, how do you characterize and how do you put the attributes on music? So I did some really deep dive research into things like the Muzak industry, right? So they used to play music for people at work. And Muzak's big game was that they would actually tweak up the tempos after lunch so that people got more work done. And they sold a lot of subscriptions to Muzak for companies as background music for work. I also looked at things like Pandora has the world's largest attribute meta-tagging system. They put, I think, over 200 tags on a piece of music. And the concept is there. They give you a suggestion engine. If you like this piece of music, well, we can look at all the attributes and meta tags about what kind of piano chords it uses and what keys it written in and how fast is it. And they take all these attributes and then they have a suggestion engine. If you like this song, here's another one that's very similar. So we're going to make you a playlist that's made out of those things. But still very different than our needs. So I had to kind of hack together and mutate together a couple different technologies. And one book that was very helpful, and I mentioned this to you, was Daniel Levitin's book, This Is Your Brain on Music, which I highly recommend. Yeah. And Levitin did a great job about, you know, he went into great depth in many parts of it. But what really helped us was not just think about music as the whole experience, but what are the attributes that are mutually exclusive that you can kind of take apart and change that would change that piece of music or would change the experience from one piece of music to the next if you change that attribute. So in other words, if I had when you sequence a record as a producer, often you will want to put a certain track in a certain sequence, track 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Well, the tracks from 2 to 3, you want them to become almost relative keys, because as you listen to that record, you don't want things to kind of rub or go the wrong way.
Yeah.
So if I can sequence a playlist or a sequence of tracks, either by their speed, their tempo, their key, their timbre of instruments, that's a whole different experience. There's even things like you can emotionally map how happy or sad music is, and then put maybe start a little bit on the subtle blue side and end up very happy, and you create an emotional experience for someone. So DJs kind of do this in clubs, and that's why we go see the world famous DJ. He's going to take us on a happy joyride dancing, and it's going to have some peaks and valleys, but he's going to pretty much make this thing go and climb and make your experience really fly from beginning to end.
So what makes music annoying?
And
how do you make sure that the music how do you know if something is pushing the right buttons? Because you can't plug yourself into some sort of, like you can with your car.
Well, you can kind of hypothesize about creating the product and how it's going to work for people. But one of the biggest things we've learned is that it is a very individual experience. So if you and I were sitting across the table from each other at work in an open office environment, and you wanted to play music that you thought would focus for you, it's likely not going to work for me. And that's one thing people should understand about their work and office environments. And that's a reason why we have it as an individual subscription at Focus at Will, because everybody's needs are different. But let's go back to monitoring that. We know that certain things, harmony, dissonance, the timbre of instruments, how close something is to human voice frequencies, these are all attributes that we're hypersensitive to as a species, kind of from our 3,000 years of survival. So let me break this down a different way. If we are back in the caveman days, yeah, and I bet Will even went through some of these different analogies with you. If we hear a stick break or something in our peripheral around us, because our ears are our 360 radar, primarily we're very, very sensitive to music and sound, a lot more than we realize. You can close your eyes, but you can't close your ears. Your ears are always on, because what you can't see, your ears are going to kind of save you from.
Yeah.
So what happens intrinsically in music and sound when we find for focus is there's certain things that can distract you. Things panning back and forth really fast in the mix. Things in the voice range, which are about 1.2 to 2.2K in frequencies. All these things will hyper affect you more than it will soothe you when you're trying to do something else and music's supposed to be in the background.
And if you link that to memories, so for example, you're talking about the ability of music to stimulate or to elicit certain emotions. Why is it that if we hear a certain track, for some reason that immediately transports us back to a particular moment in time when other external stimuli, like watching a TV program, doesn't have the same effect?
Well, that's a good deep dive question. From what I understand, and I know that that's part of the reason that we don't use vocals or familiar music for focus, is just for that reason, because you're going to hear that song, you're going to think about Dancing with Julie in seventh grade at the dance, boom, you're completely off task. Now, why that happens, from part of it, as I know, is the dopamine released when you are in pleasure and you're enjoying something roots deep into the neural connections and forms those. And those are part of the memories that form, and they form deep. Music and smell happens to be one of the also senses that forms the deepest cognitive. So if you have a sniff of some perfume that your girlfriend used to wear back in the day, that will also take you back just as fast. Music and your olfactory sound or glands are the two most memory triggering. So that's why it's very important when you're selecting music for focus that you stay away from things that are familiar.
And do you think we're just at the beginning of our understanding of the effect that music can have on us? So, you know, if you look at music, it hasn't been studied for thousands of years to this extent. So the sort of studies that you're talking about, where you're combining neurological responses with different music types, I mean, it's very new. So do you think we're at page 40 of a 1,000-page novel, or are we more advanced than that?
That's a good analogy. I think the beauty of the smartphones, right? Here's my iPhone, is now we have supercomputers in our hand. And even the next generation of these, the sensors will increase 10x. When supercomputing comes into play, you're going to have an immensely sensitive set of medical devices you're wearing around in your back pocket where they can take your heart rate variability, your blood pressure, everything just by being around you. And with that kind of sensitive, you can get the granularity to actually find out, hey, is this piece of music working for you? What is your brain scan like when you listen to this piece of music? It's very likely within a couple of years that we'll have that kind of data on a readout right on our iPhone or for sure on our laptop.
Because the music industry is unfeasibly large. I mean, do people really understand the scale? I mean, I don't have any numbers off the top of my head, but it's one of the biggest industries on earth. And is it because it elicits emotions, it transports us, it is almost drug-like in its qualities to be able to take us from where we are and put us somewhere else?
It is the lowest common denominator gateway to emotional responses. I mean, if you think about ancient times, whenever we wanted to get in touch with God or source, or we wanted to commune, or we wanted to celebrate, music has been part of the primitive existence of man since the beginning, and it stays with us. And if I think what science is revealing more and more is how deep that is in our DNA. I've read a couple studies where there's actually a particular part of the brain that has no other function but to help us decipher music.
And I'm just wondering why, from the research that we've seen so far, why is it that only humans are responsive to music? Because all the tests and all the studies are that, you know, dogs don't tap their feet when they listen to a track, for example. Is there something that you've come across that sort of explains why music, and if you break it down into its sort of DNA, but is there one element of that DNA that leaps out as being the foundation for why music is such an important part of our lives?
Boy, that's a good question. I think the best relative answer I have is, as we mentioned about plants, I did some research with an organic fertilizer company one summer. One of my friends had this crazy startup, and it would make the roots of these plants quite large. And then we did another experiment with music, and music would actually make the root structure of these plants sometimes 10 or 15% larger. Like the plant was that much happier. The tomatoes were that much bigger, that much more robust. They were breaking it down into measuring the fructose or the sugar blocks inside of these at a very scientific level. And the plants that were listening to music were really freaking happy.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
And again, it comes back to the question, how do you define happiness? There's tomato happiness versus celery happiness. But again, did you find that you'd sort of, forgive the pun, but had opened a Pandora's box to a certain extent? Because the moment you started unraveling what really makes us work, did you find that almost it felt like you were on the beginning of this journey where you had just questions and no answers, or did you begin to get some answers from the sort of research? Because I know you guys were very heavily involved in trying to interpret brain scans and MRI scans and, you know, playing with different music. So you've been at the forefront of trying to understand the relationship between brain feedback and the music that you listen to.
Yes, it was really exciting. I remember staying up nights when I actually started cracking the code on the emotional factors of music. And one of it had to do with one of the psychologists, Thayer's one, the Thayer graph. It's a two-dimensional graph, and it's how happy or how sad or how sleepy or how energetic something is. And it's a graph. And you can kind of circularly put out all the human emotions. So I was overlaying all the possible human emotions to try and convey this through the stories, and then putting that on a graph, and then starting to rate music. And then how do you rate it consistently? So we'd have three or four teams of people all rate the same music to see if we were consistent, and how can you quantify things like emotions? And it's strange, but you can get pretty good parameters and see where people will start to rate things about the same way. But then how do you measure that and keep it consistent over a study? Well, I think that what really helped us was Julia Mossbridge came to our team a few years ago. And she's one of the leading experts in music and psychology and neuroscience and how all those things intersect. It's really her passion.
Yeah.
And she broke it down into part surveys, part self-analysis, and big data. And she really proved to us that it is, in fact, an individual process how people perceive music. And she related to the big five personality tests that we can actually find out what kind of music works best for you by giving you a pretty quick survey. And we started setting up, in fact, on our website at focusitwell.com, you can go and take a find out what music works best for your brain type. So we've kind of, she has found a way to integrate our big data of all our users, over a million users, find out what people are listening to, find out what's most effective to them. And she surveyed 20,000 plus people to find out and segment, oh, if you're this type of personality, then it's likely that you're going to like this kind of music.
And again, the opposite of that, I think, was it General Noriega that was, I can't remember. It was one of these rather errant generals that was, we managed to get him out of his hiding by playing some awful rock group at number 11. So just the fact that this constant barrage of music caused him to sort of break down and just give up and leave. So the opposite to that really is, have you seen with the application of big data and people's buying patterns, because with social media and all of the big data that we're now able to tap into, are you able, do you think, to change people's behaviors or change their buying habits, for example, by playing certain types of music? So are we at the point where you can manipulate someone to do A rather than B?
Well, I think there's actually a pretty big business in consulting music for people who are, I used to make broadcast commercial music. And yes, there are certain keys, there are certain instruments you want to use to sell products. If you're going to go into a retail store and there's a reason why those playlists are put together, so-called music specialists, music analysts put together playlists for retail and they get paid quite well for it. And
it's not random. I mean, for, you know, cause it's funny. You can go into a store and you think, well, this, you know, this is nice music, but, and you imagine that someone's pulled the short straw and it's their turn that week to create the music tape.
That might even be more interesting. I think that there's quote experts making some of these playlists in stores and probably selling this to the corporations that it really works. And there's data that suggests that it does. You know, these are studies that are done, and absolutely it works. I know that in the broadcast music game, there's some really good formulas you go into when you're trying to sell the product and how that happens. And the same thing when you're doing big ticket sales for long form videos and product sales.
But you found with Focus at Will that that doesn't work. If you're trying to deal with the individual, any sort of existing music structures, that's why, I mean, you've created, 16,000 hours of your own music where you've completely deconstructed. So Focus at Will is not just another mixtape, in other words. You've actually reverse engineered everything down to its core components. And cracking the code, I think, is an absolutely brilliant way that you described it earlier. I mean, what have you found from that? Are there strange things that you discovered as you sort of unwound the DNA of music?
Well, one thing that I'm in a unique place, so I get to create these sequences and think of it like this. Rather than a playlist, what we're doing is taking, let's define the energy of this particular track of music and then this one. And then we're going to say that, all right, we want to go from this energy state to this one, to this one, to this one. So I'm building more of a, let's call it, you know, UX designers would say you're creating a journey or a path. I'm going to say, let's coin a new phrase. It's kind of like a focused journey. An energetic focus journey rather than it is a musical journey, because in our system, you can skip a track and it's going to replace it with something that has kind of the same energetic value, but hopefully is more appealing to you. So it customizes to you. And that's an important part of it. So if you find something that you don't like and it's abrasive, you just hit skip and then it reconstructs something completely based on your likes and dislikes.
And have you created your own set of metrics? So in other words, how you can't measure music in things that we know. For example, you can't say, you know, because it's emotional. You have you created the Focus at Will, the metric, I think I was reading something about this guy who suggested that that music should be measured in chills. So this piece of music has 93 chills and this one has 64. So have you sort of created your own almost like your own science, your own metrics behind what you've discovered to see if this has more...
Chills, wait a minute, I'm going to write that down. We're going to start meta-tagging chills. Yes, you know, we come up with all different ways that we think we should things should be rated, and then we experiment with them. The beauty of it is we have so many people on our system, so we can then, I can make a sequence that's based on emotions, or I can make a sequence that's based on minor keys, and we test that out and see how it works for people, and we get the big data, and we see who's how sticky it is for them, how many people are using it, how many people skip away from it, and it helps us define constantly in a feedback loop about what's working and what's not.
And it is this amazing feedback loop. It is this pure application of science that we're talking about. So we're not playing, you're not playing music and saying, yeah, how did you feel about that? You're actually being able to dive in at almost an atomic level and find out how that affects people's emotions.
Yes. And there, you know, there's theories like, well, why don't you just survey people? But sometimes people won't do what they say in their surveys, right? Like they'll survey back and say,
like all the time, you know, people lie. You know,
I'm always big on surveys because I think it gives you some kind of data, and then deeper research shows like, well, be careful what you're surveying and why. So we want to do both. We're going to start surveying a little bit more about when you get done with the channel. Hey, how did that work for you? How long were you on it? What kind of task were you doing? And start building more data points around why people are selecting things. But let a lot of the actual behavior and why people are on a channel so long and what checks they're skipping dictate a lot of what we're building and why as well.
Have you had any moments where of real discovery where it's you kind of sat back in your chair and thought, God, this is amazing. We never thought that we would discover this, or reactions, for example, from someone that's listening to your music that completely wrong-footed you in terms of what happened?
Oh, yeah. Well, we have an ADHD channel. And one of our science consultants, Evian Gordon, was describing, you know, hey, when I play these sounds in the lab, this helps get the ADHD kids. So you should look into this deeper. And it was just crazy stuff. I mean, it was really fast. It was like, sounded like a 1,000 bat wings going or something. It was pretty nuts. And, you know, Will Henschel's great at this stuff. He's like, oh, I think some music, like maybe some really crazy fast Gabba House music or something like that might work. Let's see how this works. And I was putting this together thinking, all right, well, this is a great experiment and we're experimenters and we're going to do this. But is it going to work? Is it going to work? And boy, the day we hooked this channel up and released it, we had 4 or 5 moms email us the next day and say, wow, my son can focus like never before, and we don't have to give him meds. I was just amazed how fast a certain thing works for certain people. And that was the big aha for me when I realized, oh, you think you understand focus in the brain, but until you start getting all these even smaller edge cases and what little things work for different people, you realize how different we all are and how energetically our senses, our 5 senses plus others, are taking in information on the planet, and how do we all process that? It is really a different thing. But one of the biggest bang ahas for me was making that channel and just going, wow, we create something that no one's ever done before.
And I think it is that what you're saying is that ability to understand that we are just at the beginning, maybe, of really understanding how the senses work together. So, I mean, let's talk about AR, mixed reality, augmented reality, because the importance of sound in those environments. So you've got a 3D holographic set of goggles as opposed to the sort of trash can that you sort of duct taped your head. You've got the things that you can see through. So you've got that true 3D augmented reality. The power of music or the power of sound in creating that three-dimensional activity, that must be pretty critical to the overall effect.
Yes. Well, you know, back to our primitive senses again, and what we're very sensitive to is proximity. Here's a great illustration. So if I am going to listen to Mozart, which I've become way more fond of since I've been doing all this Mozart editing the last couple months for our classical channel, it's pretty fast and it's really dynamic and it's beautiful. But when they mic a piano for classical music or for pop music, what do? They put the microphone in the piano, right? So now the piano is this huge box. It vibrates with these fantastic strings, and you're hitting a hammer to hit the keynote, and it's banging a note, and now the microphone's right there. Now, if I'm going to read a book, I don't want to put my head in a piano and listen to it, right? So proximity becomes really, now people don't think about this. They want to just put on, you know, the YouTube channel and have Beethoven's Fifth going, but understand that all that stuff has been produced to be really big bang. This was like the jam show back in the day as a composer. And then if you're a performer, of course, you're going to perform the best you can, perform your brains out and really articulate this. For focus, not the deal. So back to AR and 3D space. I'll wind this back in. I'm on a little bit of a tangent. But proximity becomes very key for driving an emotion and for support. So if I can take that piano player now in 3D and I can move him 20 feet away in reverberation that feels like he's in the next room rather than I'm inside of his piano, it's a whole different way that I'm going to experience that as a focus user. Or if I'm going to build an experience, there's many ways to tame proximity with AR, because not only are you getting the 3D visual, but now that sound can match it in three planes.
Which will really completely transport you from your existing reality. I think the importance is that the combination of sound and 3D graphics is, I mean, so that must be quite an exciting development, but also the ability to create an emotional response as well, being able to change the sound and change the way that we perceive the visual elements so that you can elicit emotional responses to games or to environments. I mean, that must be another part of the science that you're seeing emerge as well.
Well, the beauty is your neocortex doesn't tell the difference whether it was a dream or if it was virtual reality. It goes straight in the brain. So there isn't an input from a 2D to a 2D screen into the brain. So in other words, we're looking at a movie on a flat screen and deciphering that, yes, that is 2D, but in my imagination, I'm turning it into 3. Now, when things come at you in 3D, your brain says, oh, wait, that was 3D. That might have been reality, or it might have been virtual reality. I can't tell the difference. Whole different game changer. And when I really realized this, I was at Singularity University 2 years ago. We were presenting, and a great producer, director Chris Milk, total genius. He had done a YouTube video and a couple other things, and he was presenting there, and he has a great TED Talk, and he talks about it as the ultimate art form because now you're getting emotions directly through the neocortex. And he explains this, and then his work is completely emotionally driven. And he does a fantastic job leading with sound so that I'll be looking at over this fantastic view of the ocean, and then someone will whisper behind me and I'll turn around because it's in 3D, and he will actually run the narrative of his movies and his segments by leading you with sound in 3D. So it becomes a very powerful, important medium that you can use for entertainment. And of course, we could harness for different ways where we want to put it for focus in leading experiences.
And again, this all leads back exactly what you were saying. It's this concept that if you can start understanding the DNA or the code behind music, then there are endless opportunities for it to become a critical part of our everyday life. So it's no longer just the headphones, the music. It becomes a controlling influence almost. So the value of music, is it going to turn into, you know, the good guys and the bad guys in music? Are we going to end up with music where we tune into a particular station and we get some response that is frowned on by the authorities? Or
I would have to say that, sure, just like advertising, as we get into the Minority Report world where you're going to walk down the street and billboards are now dynamically adjusting to you. Matthew's walking by, so we're going to show him some new shirts, and you know, here's the menswear. And of course, they're going to use music that is going to compel you to buy and be more open to and support their displays, for sure. I can guarantee it.
But is that going to be music, though, that they know from the psychological profiling of all my social media, they know that that particular piece of music is going to make me buy that shirt. Whereas if someone else walks by, you know, the same look as me, as it were, then they'll play something completely different. Is that where we're getting to?
We are actually there. There's enough data points to start doing that. And you will see that a lot faster than you will believe. Yes.
And it's not just music, it sounds generally sort of sounds.
So think about dynamic ads that you see on Facebook that are completely dynamically driven by your behaviors, right? So all that music and things you like and ads that now will have music in them will all be driven by exactly your data points and your behavior.
Well, that's fascinating.
It's the ultimate dynamic web.
It's kind of scary too, because you feel like, you know, it's almost like you have no control, because if music is playing in the background, it's almost like it sort of gets under your skin. You don't know it's there. And you'll feel yourself doing things. So talk about, you know, the, the revenge of the nerds. I mean, it's just the world will be driven by people that understand how to tweak a little bit of science here and there. You know, you can completely change the way that we, the way that everybody does everything.
It could probably get more distracting than ever because, you know, from the research we've done, we know how much humans are affected by sound and never realize it. We never are taught this in school. Like, you know, you have to be sensitive to your sound environments. There's cities that are very loud, that are very tiring, and people just get burned out. I mean, I think that... There you go. Did you hear the motorcycle?
Case in point. There you are. Yes.
Right on cue. Right on there. Yes. So there's some very loud cities, and they're finding actual fatigue in people just from sitting because no one realizes how in tune your ears are. Back to what we brought up earlier, our primal instincts rely on our 360 radar so much so that there's actually more input to the brain from the ears than anything else.
And with Focus at Will, you've been able to really just tune into that. So, and I've listened to your music and it works, and I don't know why it works because it doesn't sound that different, but over a period of time it does have a big effect because you sort of fly through stuff and you know I found myself just absolutely focused and concentrating on what I'm able to do. With normal music, you're thinking, I want the next track, or I like this bit, you might replay that, or yeah, that reminds me of a particular scene. But somehow what you've been able to do is with the product on with your company, it actually does work. And that's the astonishing thing.
There's a lot of thought that goes into it. And there's a lot of feedback looping and finding out what's working for people. And, there's a few concepts that if you look at humans in silence, boy, the brain is very overreactive and very active. So just having something playing. So most people want to reach for their headphones and put on music, but they're actually listening to the wrong music. So, you know, our big quest started there. It's like, what is going to soothe people but not overstimulate them? And it's different for different people. So there's actually a different energy switch on every channel because we might both like classical piano, you and I, but I might need it a lot faster and a lot brighter. You might need it a little bit slower and a little bit duller. So there's those variations as well. And we're slowly working out how to customize the experience even more per brain type and per person.
Yeah.
And we really feel like the more we can build a palette of channels and a palette of energy levels for you, you'll have two or three things to go to. So if you're trying to get creative or scientific, whatever you need, you'll have something to cover it.
So what can you give us any sort of snippets of the future, things that you're working on, which are just going to sort of blow us away in terms of the application of what you've been working on so far and how that's going to develop over the next, you know, couple of years or so? Without giving the game away.
I can't give away too much. Sure, absolutely. I think that, I know Will is really infatuated with drones. Not flying plane drones, but drone sound. So something that has much more of a constant sound.
Yes.
So how can we find something? I think there's a magic drone for you, Matthew, and everyone else. They don't realize it, but it's almost like when you go into a meditation, you go om somewhere.
Absolutely. Oh. Yeah, that vibrational thing. Yes.
You know, we all produce a different om sound. We're never all in total key with each other. So what happens is I think there's an individual kind of drone or om for each person. And I want to help people find what that is and build things like around that particular profile for them.
Because that's fascinating. Because the whole sort of meditation thing, the importance of that vibration. I know absolutely zero about it, but I know that it is really important that vibration that sets up all sorts of, you know, good things happening. And without it, it doesn't have the same effect. So if you can create that and have it piped to me, then I mean I'm getting pretty excited just thinking about it.
It becomes a real customizable experience that gets really juicy because then you know it has that comfort feeling. You know, so maybe there's an overlay of how meditation, music, natural tones, naturally occurring things like waves. How do you get the best of all those elements and start turning into something that's a little bit more customizable for the person?
And if it's in some sort of 3D environment, I can actually feel like I'm sitting on the beach somewhere, or I can feel like I'm up in the mountain listening to the eagles flying, or as opposed to the eagles playing,
well put.
then that's well,
so think of the escapist benefits of getting outside of your cubicle or your open office environment and really feeling that kind of place. You know,
God, I'd even want to go to work if that was the case. You know, you'd actually look forward to your cubicle because it's like, you know, now I'm here, I'm here, but not here.
Who knows? There could be little pods in work, in open office environments where you need to go and do that kind of thing. Where we've been trying to brainstorm all kinds of things for HR and how teams and groups could work together.
Well, it sounds it must be, you know, it's fascinating to do this. Just the discovery that you have and the fact that it works and the application and the fact that you can test it and you get immediate responses and again, does it feel like you're at the beginning of this big discovery process?
Oh, I think we're on, let's go back to your page analogy. Maybe we're on page 20 of 1,000. You know, I think that all this stuff is just starting to come together for the convergence and how you put it together and how creative you get as a human. So when people say, how big a part is AI going to help? I think the first part of that is that AI is going to be able to help you do pattern recognition and integration. So that as a human, you can get creative about what you want to make and you're not bogged down. A great analogy is AI is fantastic for building like car chassis because you can bring up every car chassis in the world that's ever been designed and then mutate it quickly. So in a matter of hours, you can do the work that took maybe a century to get to.
Wow.
So when you start thinking about how that applies to the arts, so now I want to look at every piece of classical piano music in G, the key of G. Bam. AI will help me bring all that stuff together as a quick reference point and do a much faster analysis instead of me doing this for the last couple of years, you know, digging through this library and finding this. And it just brings it all into such a instant creation that the human mind can then create way faster and way more powerfully and way more imaginatively. Because I think AI is kind of like the heavy lifting robot at first. Now it'll morph into many things, but I think that's the first thing it's going to really help us do. So pattern recognition, link up things and patterns that we wouldn't see as human. And then by taking some of the emotional value out, like maybe there's something in music that's, I would steer away from doing something that's really bright and loud because I think, well, God, our data's kind of shown that that's not going to be really good for focus. But the bot doesn't know that. He might go in there and find something that, oh, well, if I link this and this and this together and try it, and then, wow, we find something that helps a different brain type that we would have never thought of before. Because as humans, we shy away from, we're kind of limited by our own beliefs sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's
another power.
You're right. We're limited because you can't help assuming that if you do something, it's going to have a particular outcome. So you can't help assuming that this horrible, bright, tinny music, no one's going to like that. So you ignore it. And maybe AI will just help you say, look, John, you've got to take a second look at this. And that unlocks the whole. So just being at the beginning of AI as well is astonishing. So, it sounds pretty exciting. I mean, do you want to swap jobs? I mean, you know.
Well, you know, we're always looking for help over here. Come on over. And
yeah, well, I mean, if you know anything I can do. But listen, I got some questions for you, actually. So I got
sure.
Bring it all back down to earth now, I think, with my 10 questions from James Lipton's Inside the Actor Studio. Again, thank you, James.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Still doesn't respond to my emails. So my first question is, what is your favorite word?
My favorite word is, it changes. I think this week it's visioneering.
Visionary or visioneering?
Visioneering.
Visioneering, okay.
Visioneering. Disney and some other people were really big visioneers. They were not only having their own insights about what could be done and bringing things from other realms here, but actually putting structure around it. How do you become a good visioneer? I want to master that.
Can I use that phrase without having to pay someone for it? Or
I'm not sure, but yeah, you can give it a go.
It's not trademarked, but I know I'm going to get a call from Disney or something. my second question is, what is your least favorite word?
My least favorite word is no or can't.
You know, there's a lot of people that agree with you. So you're not alone there. What are you most excited about right now?
What I'm most excited about? Well, two things. One of them is visionary. I'd say the other one is... I'm really interested in cutting the timeline down in startups. I think that the human mind works really fast. And I think, you know, there's agile and there's lean. And we've kind of gotten startup mode, and we've worked with 500 startups. And how do you get a concept like Focus at Will, and how long does it take to do it? And I think a lot of these take 6 to 7 to 8 years. And I think things are going to change drastically. So I would summarize it like this. I'm really excited about shrinking the timeline so that badass entrepreneurs can come up with a concept and make it happen much faster, shave 3 or 4 years off the process.
And, you know, funny enough, and there's so much activity happening in the blockchain and cryptocurrencies. So access to capital,
yes,
which I think is a really critical part of that, that the landscape there could change dramatically in the next, you know, 12, 18, 24 months. So that could well become, dream could become a reality very quickly. So my next question then, naturally, is what turns you off right now?
Geez, what turns me off right now? boy, that's a tough one. I'm a pretty big optimist. I would say the minutiae of project management. I like to go brainstorm the concepts and go, all right, here's how we can fly and do it. Now, can someone actually, you know, get the project board out and make sure everything's happened daily?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fabulous. Fair enough. So now we're moving on to sounds and noises, my sounds and noises section. Question number 5,
perfect.
What sound or noise do you love?
Oh, I love, I'm re-infatuated with the ocean. And I think that there's a proximity to the ocean where I can get in, and it just fills and surrounds me, and I feel like, oh, this is the jam. So I try and get there as much as I can.
Fantastic. And what sound or noise do you hate?
Oh, that's an easy one. It's the leaf blowers.
Oh, yeah.
The leaf blowers really drive me crazy. And I used to think, like, people are complaining. When I first moved to California, I'm like, what are people complaining? There's no leaf blowers from this time to this time. Californians are hilarious. And now I've definitely become one of them.
It's funny. You'll probably find, you know, after 20,000 years of musical DNA deconstruction, that the sound of the leaf blower universally has been the most hated sound across generations of people. You know, even on Mars, they'll find that, you know, leaf blowers will be banned, I'm sure. So leading on to nicely question number 7, what is your favorite curse word?
My favorite curse word. Is it okay to say anything on air here?
Yes.
We're going to edit. Okay, well,
no, we're going to keep this. This is the whole point. We could keep. you can bleep yourself out if you feel so inclined.
I think phonetically, there's just something wonderful about fuck, because it has the hard CK and it pushes a lot of air atmospherically. It's, you know, if I was an instrument and I'm pushing out the note fuck, it's like that says a lot. And I think it's a powerful word for unlawful carnal knowledge, for deeper meanings of it, and for all the different inflections it's used in our language. It's become pretty interesting. And, you know, even thought leaders use it on stage to get people's attention. It's become this thing.
And would you, so as an instrument player, would you become a saxophonist, for example? So that's your...
Absolutely.
Or create a new instrument.
Big bass of fuck or something.
Yeah, so you could create an instrument that just plays with expletives, you know, like sort of everything from... You know, which I'm just going to... I invented that if anyone's listening. Question number 8, what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Oh boy, if I could do it all over again. I am really fascinated with human behavior. I think I would want to be a psychologist. I think I am kind of a closet psychologist, and that's my attraction for music into that way. But yeah, I'm really fascinated by humans.
And what profession would you not like to attempt?
That would have to be the bookkeeper or the tax accountant. That's tough stuff. I mean, I really value what they're doing, and the numbers help give me clarity. But boy, if I do the numbers, I get burned out and can't get creative at all.
Do you know, this has to be a shout out to all the CPAs and accountants out there. Thank you for your service. We couldn't do it without you. It's just not within us. So it doesn't matter how many gigabytes of Focus at Will music I listen to, I just could not do it. Yeah, so that's... and my last question then, John, this is the question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Oh, this is a fun one. So here, maybe I'll role play as St. Peter or God or something. Be like, dude, you're here. We're really glad you made it. And let's take a look at these wonderful things you did on the planet here. This legacy left of helping people. And this wonderful effort that you've taken to get people in harmony with music And for all the time that you've spent holding space for people and really trying to help them, I think that would be a really big one to hear from God. Because I really mean it. I enjoy that part of it a lot down here.
Well, which is brilliant. Thank you very much. And John, it's been such a pleasure having you on. How do people get in touch with you? How do they find out about Focus at Will? How do they listen to all this stuff that we've been talking to? How do they experience it right now?
Great question. Well, the easiest way is to go right to focusatwill.com. Just as it says, spelled out, focusatwill.com. And what you'll find here is our wonderful test that helps you figure out what music will help you focus best. It'll recommend a channel for you, and you can sign up. It's a 2-week free trial. You put in your credit card, and very easy to do, and you'll enjoy it, and you'll figure out the rest from there.
Which is superb. And I'll put all those details on the show notes. And John, thank you once again for being on Hooked on Startups. It's been such a pleasure having you, and I can't wait to follow your progress and keep focusing, you know, and doing all those things courtesy of what you've created.
Thanks for having us, and we're going to keep doing it.